Welcome in the Great Khan's tent. History, literature, and storytelling. In the Great Khan's Tent is now available on YouTube. You can find us using this podcast name. Fear not, listeners, episodes will still be released on this podcast first, and it is only after a delay of a week that I will upload them onto YouTube. You can still find us on all your podcast providers first. In the Great Khan's Tent is now available on YouTube. You can find us using this podcast name. Fear not, listeners, episodes will still be released on this podcast first, and it is only after a delay of a week that I will upload them onto YouTube. You can still find us on all your podcast providers first. If you have any suggestions, comments, or complaints, please be sure to email us at allowercaseinthegreatkhanstent@gmail.com. That is inthegreatkhanstent@gmail.com. We would love to hear from our listeners. In this episode, we continue our exciting exploration of the 1001 Nights with the story of Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, the distracted slave of love, with Nights 40 and 41, where we encounter the story of the first slave, Bukhayt, and how he was castrated. We then continue to the story of the second slave, Kafur, and listen to the mischief he inflicted on his master and the town before getting his supposed comeuppance. We then return back to our main character, Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, the distracted slave of love, and what he found in the chest that the three slaves had carried to the graveyard. As you listen to this episode, consider why Ghanim could have gotten the title of Distracted Slave of Love by his clear omission of what he was supposed to be up to and what he was actually up to. This episode is important as it begins one of the great divergences within the 1001 Nights translations that we will have to deal with as we continue our journey with this work. The story of the first slave, Bukhayt, was excluded from the translation of Edward William Lane on account of its content, but was included in the translation of John Payne. But this was also, by my estimation, significantly toned down due to English sensibilities. If you need a refresher on the issues of obscenity and bolderization within the 1001 Nights, then refer back to our 1 year special episode 1, where we dealt with this issue. A'udhu billah minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Praise be to Allah, the Lord of the two worlds, and blessings and peace upon the Prince of the Prophets, our Lord and Master Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, whom Allah bless and preserve with abiding and continuing peace and blessing until the day of the faith. To proceed, the lives of former generations are a lesson to posterity, that a man may review the remarkable events which have happened to others and be admonished, and may consider the history of people of preceding ages and of all that hath befallen them and be restrained. Extolled be the perfection of him who hath thus ordained the history of former generations to be a lesson to those which follow. Such are the tales of 1001 Nights with their romantic stories and fables. Sherazad continued. The story of the eunuch Bukhayt. I was brought from my native country when I was 5 years old by a slave merchant who sold me to one of the royal messengers. My master had a 3-year-old daughter with whom I was reared, and they used to make sport of me, letting me play with the girl and dance and sing to her until I reached the age of 18 and she had of 16, and even then they did not forbid me from her. One day I went in to her and found her sitting in an inner room perfumed with essences and scented woods, and her face shone like the round of the moon on its 14th night, as if she had just come out of the bath that was in the house. She began to sport with me, and I with her. Now I had reached the age of puberty, and my yard rose on end as it were a great bolt. Then she threw me down, and mounting my breast, pulled me hither and thither till my yard became uncovered. When she saw this and it in point, she seized it in her hand and fell to rubbing it against the lips of her kazé outside her trousers. At this, heat stirred in me, and I put my arms round her, while she wreathed hers round my neck and strained me to her with all her might, till, before I knew what I did, my yard thrust through her trousers and entered her kazé, did away her maidenhead. When I saw what I had done, I fled and took refuge with one of my comrades. Presently her mother came in to her, and seeing her in this state, was lost to the world. However, she smoothed the matter over, and hid the girl's condition from her father, for the love they bore me, nor did they cease to call to me and coax me till they took me from where I was. After 2 months had passed by, her mother married her to a young man, a barber, who used to shave her father, and portioned and fitted her out of her own monies, while her father knew nothing of what had passed. Then they took me unawares and gelded me, and when they brought her to her husband, they made me her eunuch to go before her wherever she went, whether to the bath or to her father's house. On the wedding night, they slaughtered a young pigeon and sprinkled the blood on her shift, and I abode with her a long while, enjoying her beauty and grace by way of kissing and clipping and clicketing, embracing and sleeping with her, till she died, and her husband and father and mother died also, when they seized me for the treasury, and I found my way hither, where I became your comrade. This, O my brothers, is my story, and how I came to be docked of my cullions. And peace be on you, said the second eunuch. Know, O my brothers, that. The story of the slave Kafur. Know, O my brothers, that I was at the commencement of my career a boy of 8 years, and I used to tell one lie to the slave merchants every year, so that they fell out with each other in consequence, and the slave merchant, my master, becoming impatient of me, committed me to the broker, desiring him to cry, "Who will buy this slave with this fault?" He was therefore asked, "What is his fault?" and answered, "He telleth one lie every year." And a merchant approached the broker and said to him, "How much have they bidden for this slave with his fault?" He answered, "They have bidden 600 pieces of silver." "Then thou shalt have 20 for thyself," replied the merchant. So the broker introduced him to the slave merchant, who received from him the money, and the broker conveyed me to the dwelling of the merchant and took his brokerage. The merchant clad me in a dress suitable to my condition, and I continued with him for the remainder of the year, until the new year commenced with prosperity. It was a blessed year, plenteous in the produce of the earth, and the merchants began to give entertainments every day, one taking his turn to do so, until it was my master's turn to give an entertainment in a garden within the city. So he went, and the other merchants also, and he took for them what they required of food and other provisions, and they sat eating and drinking and carousing till noon, when my master wanted something from the house, and said, "O slave, mount the mule, and go to the house, and bring from thy mistress such a thing, and return quickly." I obeyed, therefore, and went to the house, but when I approached it, I shrieked out and shed tears, whereupon the people of the quarter assembled together, old and young, and my master's wife and daughters, hearing my cry, opened the door and asked me what was the matter. I answered them, My master was sitting beneath an old wall, he and his friends, and it fell upon them. And when I beheld what happened to them, I mounted the mule and came in haste to inform you. And when his children and wife heard these words, they shrieked and tore their clothes and slapped their faces, and the neighbors came to them. Then my master's wife overturned the furniture of the house, one thing upon another, and pulled down its shelves, and broke its shutters and its windows and the lattices, and smeared its wall with mud and indigo, and said to me, "Woe to thee, O Kafir! Come hither and help me and demolish these cupboards and smash these vessels and this chinaware." So I went to her and destroyed with her the shelves of the house and all that was upon them and its cupboard and what they contained, and went about over the terraces destroying things and through every place until I had laid waste the whole, crying all the while, "O my master!" My mistress then went forth with her face uncovered and only with her head veil, and the girls and the boys went with her, saying to me, "O Kafir, walk on before us and showed us the place where thy master lieth dead beneath the wall, that we may take him forth from under the ruins and carry him in a bier and bring him to the house and convey his corpse in a handsome manner to the burial." So I walked before them, crying, "O my master!" And they followed me with their faces and heads uncovered, crying, "O our misfortune! O our calamity!" And there was none among the men, nor among the women, nor among the children, nor a maiden, nor an old woman in the quarter who did not accompany us. And all of them slapped themselves in the excess of their lamentations. Thus I went with them through the city, and the people asking the news, they informed them of that which they had heard from me, and the people exclaimed, "There is no strength nor power but in Allah, the High, the Great." While others said, "He was a man of importance, we must go to the Wali and tell him." "We will go to the Wali and acquaint him." And when they arrived before the Wali, they informed him, and he mounted and took with him laborers with axes and baskets, and they followed my footsteps, accompanied by a crowd of people. Night 40. Morning now dawned, and Shahrazad broke off from what she had been allowed to say. Then, when it was the 40th night, she continued, "I have heard, O auspicious Shahanshah, that when they went and told the Wali, he rose, mounted, and took with him workmen with shovels and baskets." Kafir went on, "I preceded them, weeping and crying out, and throwing dust upon my head, and slapping my face, and when I came to the party in the garden, and my master beheld me, I slapped my face and exclaimed, 'O my mistress, who will have pity upon me after my mistress? Would that I had been her sacrifice!' When my master therefore saw me, he was confounded. His countenance became pale, and he said, 'What aileth thee, O Kafir? And what is this predicament, and what is the news?' I answered him, 'When thou sendest me to the house to bring thee what thou wantest, I went hither and entered the house, and found that the wall of the saloon had fallen, and that the whole saloon had tumbled down upon my mistress and her children.' 'And did thy mistress,' said he, 'escape?' I answered, 'No, not one of them escaped, and the first of them that died was my mistress, the elder.' 'But did my youngest daughter escape?' he asked. I answered, 'No.' 'And what,' said he, 'hath become of the mule that I ride? Is she safe?' 'No, O my master,' I answered, 'for the walls of the house and the walls of the stable tumbled down upon all that was in the house, even upon the sheep and the geese and the hens, and all of them became a mass of flesh beneath the ruins. Not one of them escaped.' Then he said to me, 'And thy master, the elder?' I answered, 'No, not one escaped, and now there remains neither house nor inhabitant, nor any trace of them. And as to the sheep and the geese and the hens, the cats and dogs have now eaten them.' And when my master heard my words, the light became darkness before his face, and he was no longer master of his senses nor his reason, and was unable to stand upon his feet. He was paralyzed, and the strength of his back failed him, and he rent his clothes and plucked his beard and slapped his face and threw his turban from his head and ceased not to cry, "Ah, O my children! Ah, O my wife! Oh, my misfortune! Upon whom hath happened the like of that which hath happened to me?" The merchant, also his companions, joined with him in cries and lamentations, and were moved with pity for his case, and rent their clothes. And my master went forth from the garden, beating himself for the calamity that had, as he supposed, befallen him, and redoubled the blows upon his face, seeming as though he was drunk. And as the party thus went out from the gate of the garden, they beheld a great dust and heard tumultuous cries, and looking in that direction, saw the crowd approaching them. This crowd was the wali and his attendants, and a concourse of people who had come to gratify their curiosity, with the merchant's family behind them, shrieking and crying with violent lamentation and excessive grief. And the first who accosted my master were his wife and children. On beholding these, he was confounded and laughed and said to them, "How are ye, and what hath happened to you in the house, and what hath befallen you?" And when they saw him, they exclaimed, "Praise be to Allah for thy safety," and they threw themselves upon him. And his children clung to him, crying out, "O our father, praise be to Allah for thy safety, O our father." And his wife said to him, "Praise be to Allah, who hath shown us thy face in safety." And she was stupefied, and her reason fled from her at that which she beheld. She then said to him, "How didst thou escape with thy friends?" And how, said he, "were ye in the house?" "We were all well," they answered, "in prosperity and health, and no evil hath befallen our house, save that thy slave Kafur came to us with his head uncovered and his clothes rent, crying out, 'O my master, O my master!' And we said to him, 'What is the matter, O Kafur?' And he answered, 'My master was sitting under a wall in the garden, and it fell upon him, and he died.' 'By Allah,' replied my master, 'he came to me just now crying, O my mistress, O the children of my mistress,' and said, 'My mistress and her children were all dead.' He then looked aside, and seeing me with my turban falling from my head, while I still cried out and wept violently and threw dust upon my head, he called out to me, so I approached him, and he said to me, 'Woe to thee, O malvoyant slave, O misbegotten wretch, O thou of accursed race, what events hast thou brought about? But by Allah, I will strip off thy skin from thy flesh, and cut thy flesh from thy bones.' 'By Allah,' I replied, 'thou cannot not do to me anything, for thou broughtest me with my fault on this condition, the witness testifying that thou broughtest me with my fault, thou knowing it, and it was that I was accustomed to tell one lie every year, and this is but half a lie, and when the year is complete, I will tell the other half of it, so it will be an entire lie.' But upon this he cried out at me, 'O most accursed of slaves, is this but half a lie? Nay, it is an exceeding calamity. Depart from me, for thou art free.' 'By Allah,' I replied, 'if thou liberate me, I will not liberate thee until the year be complete, and I tell the remaining half of the lie, and when I have completed it, then take me to the market and sell me as thou broughtest me with my fault, and liberate me not, for I have no trade by means of which to procure my sustenance.' This point is found in Sharia law. This is a legal proposition that I have stated to thee, laid down by the lawyers in the chapter of emancipation." While we were thus talking, the crowd approached with the people of the quarter, women and men, come to mourn, and the wali with his attendants, and my master and other merchants, went to the wali and acquainted him with the case, and that this was but half a lie. And when the people who were present heard this, they were astonished at this lie, and struck with the utmost wonder, and they cursed and reviled me, while I stood laughing and saying, "How can my master kill me when he brought me with this fault?" So when my master went to the house, he found it in a state of ruin, and it was I who destroyed the greater part, and broke in it things worth a large sum of money. And his wife said to him, "It was Kafur who broke the vessels and the chinaware." Upon this his rage increased, and he exclaimed, "By Allah, in my life I have never seen such a misbegotten wretch as this slave." He struck one hand against the other and said, "By my life, I have never seen a bastard to match this slave. Yet he calleth it a half a lie. What then would have been the result had it been a whole lie? In that case, he had destroyed a city or two cities." Then, in the access of his rage, he went to the wali, who inflicted upon me a severe beating, so that I became insensible and swooned away. My master left me unconscious and brought a barber to me, who castrated me and cauterized the wound. When I came to my senses, it was to find myself a eunuch. My master said, "As you burned my heart with regret for the things I held dearest, so I have made your heart burn for the loss of the dearest part of your body." After which my master contrived means of obtaining for me a high price as a eunuch, and I ceased not to excite disturbances in the places into which I was sold, and was transferred from emir to emir, and from grandee to grandee by sale and purchase, until I entered the palace of the Prince of the Faithful. And now my spirit is broken, and my strength hath failed. When the other slaves had heard his story, they laughed at it and said to him, "Verily, thou art a villain, the son of a villain. Thou hast told an abominable lie." The first and second then said to the third slave, "Relate to us thy story." "O sons of my uncle," he replied, "all that hath just been related is nonsense, but my story is long. I'll tell you how I came to lose my testicles, and I deserve an even worse punishment, for I lay with my mistress as well as my master's son. But this is not a time to tell it, for the morning, O sons of my uncle, is near, and perhaps it may overtake us with this chest still before us, and we shall be disgraced among the public, and our lives will be lost. Haste then to work, and when we have finished and returned home, I will relate to you my story." So they put down the light and dug a trench of the size of the chest between four tombs, Kafur digging and Sawab removing the earth in baskets, until they had dug to the depth of half a fathom, when they put the chest into the trench and replaced the earth over it, and went forth from the enclosure, and having closed the gate, disappeared from before the eyes of Ghanim, the son of Ayyub. When, therefore, they had left the place vacant unto Ghanim, and he knew that he was alone, his mind became busied respecting the contents of the chest, and he said within himself, "What can this chest contain?" He waited until daybreak gleamed and shone forth, and then he descended from the palm tree and removed the earth with his hand until he had uncovered the chest and disengaged it, when he took a stone and struck with it the lock and broke it, and lifting up the cover, he looked in and beheld a sleeping damsel stupefied with binge, but still breathing. She was of beautiful and lovely person, and decked with ornaments of gold and necklaces of jewels worth a kingdom, and of a value that no money would equal. When Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, beheld her, he knew that she had been the object of a plot, and, being convinced of this, he pulled her up until he had lifted her out of the chest and laid her upon her back, and as soon as she scented the breeze and the air entered her nostrils and her mouth and throat, she sneezed and then was choked and coughed, whereupon there fell from her throat a round piece of benge, of such potency that if an elephant smelt it, he would sleep from one night to another. She then opened her eyes and, looking around, said with an eloquent voice, "Woe to thee, O wind! Thou neither satisfiest the thirsty, nor cheerest by thy presence the satisfied with drink. Where is Zahr al-Bustan?" But no one answered her. Then, looking aside, she exclaimed, "Sabiha, Sheja al-Dur, Nur al-Huda, Najmat al-Sub. Are thou awake, Nuze, Hulwe, Zarife, Shubiha? Speak ye." But no one answered her, and she looked round about her and exclaimed, "Alas for me that I am transported to the tombs. O thou who knowest the secret of the breasts and recompensest on the day of resurrection, who hath brought me from among the curtains and the veils and placed me amid four tombs?" While she was saying all this, Ghanim stood still, but he now said to her, "O my mistress, there are neither whales, boudoirs here, nor palaces, nor tombs for thee here. This is none other than thy slave, Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, whom Allah, who is omniscient with respect to hidden things, hath impelled hither that he may deliver thee from these troubles, and that the utmost of thy desires may be accomplished unto thee." And he was silent. And when she became convinced of the truth of the case, she exclaimed, "I testify that there is no deity but Allah, and I testify that Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam is Allah's apostle." Then, looking towards Ghanim with her hands placed upon her breast, she said to him with a sweet voice, "O auspicious youth, who brought me unto this place? For now I have recovered my senses." "O my mistress," he answered, "three eunuchs came bearing this chest," and he related to her all that had happened, and how the evening had overtaken him, so that he became the means of her preservation, and that otherwise she had died of suffocation. And he inquired of her respecting her history. "O youth," she replied, "praise be to Allah who hath cast me into the hands of one like thee. Rise therefore now and put me into the chest and go forth to the road, and as soon as thou shalt find any one who lets out asses or other beasts or a muleteer, hire him to transport this chest and convey me to thy house, and when I am in thy abode, it will be well, and I will relate to thee my story and acquaint thee with my tale, and good fortune will accrue to thee through my means." So Ghanim rejoiced, and he went forth into the desert tract. The day had begun to gleam, the sun rose in splendor, and the people came walking forth, and Ghanim hired a man with a mule and brought him to the burial place. He then lifted the chest after he had put the damsel into it, and with his heart smitten by love for her, proceeded with her, full of joy, for she was a damsel worth 10,000 pieces of gold, and was decked with ornaments and apparel of enormous value. Scarcely had he found himself at his house when he put down the chest. Night 41. Morning now dawned, and Shahrazad broke off from what she had been allowed to say. Then, when it was the 41st night, she continued, "I have heard, O auspicious Shahenshah, that when Ghanim brought the chest to his house and opened it and took forth from it the damsel, who looked and saw that the place was a handsome dwelling furnished with variegated carpets, and she observed the gay colors and various embellishments, and beheld stuffs packed up and loads of goods and other property. So she knew that he was a great merchant and a man of wealth. She then uncovered her face and looked at him and observed him to be a handsome young man and loved him. And she said to him, "Bring us something to eat." He answered her, "On the head and the eye be thy commands." And he went to the market and brought a roasted lamb and a dish of sweetmeat and procured some dried fruits and candles and wines and glasses together with other such things needed for drinking and the requisite apparatus for perfumes. Then returning to the house, he took in the things, and when the damsel saw him, she laughed and kissed him and embraced him and began to caress him, so that the love which he felt increased and took entire possession of his heart. They then ate and drank until the approach of night, and their love was mutual, for they were both of the same age and both equal in comeliness. And when the night approached, the distracted slave of love, Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, rose and lighted the candles and lamps, and the chamber glistened. He then brought forth the wine service and prepared the table, and sat down with her, he filling and handing to her, and she filling and handing to him, while they both toyed and laughed and recited verses. Their gaiety increased, and they were engrossed by mutual love. Extolled be the perfection of the uniter of hearts. Thus they continued until it was near morning, when sleep overcame them, and each of them slept apart from the other till morning came. Ghanim, the son of Ayyub, then rose and went forth to the market and brought what was requisite of vegetables and meat and wine and other provisions and brought them to the house. And when he sat with her to eat, and they ate until they were satisfied, after which he brought the wine and they drank and toyed together until their cheeks reddened and their eyes became more intensely black. And Ghanim said, "O my mistress, have compassion on the captive of thy love and him whom thy eyes have slain. I had remained sound of heart but for thee." Ghanim longed to kiss the girl and to sleep with her. "Lady," he said, "allow me once to kiss your mouth so that this may cool the fire of my heart." "Ghanim," she replied, "wait until I am drunk and unconscious, and then steal a kiss from me secretly, so that I don't know that you have kissed me." She then stood up and took off some of her clothes, so that she was left sitting in a delicate shift with a silken head covering. At that Ghanim felt stirrings of lust, and he said, "Lady, won't you let me do what I asked you?" "By Allah," she said, "that cannot be, as there is a hard word written on the waistband of my drawers." Ghanim was downcast, but as his goal became more distant, so the ardor of his love increased, and he recited, "I asked the one who caused my sickness for a kiss to cure the pain." "No, no, never," the beloved said. "But yes, yes," I replied. She smiled and said, "Take it with my goodwill, by lawful means." "By force?" I asked, and she said, "No, but with my generous consent." "Do not inquire what happened then. Ask pardon from the Lord, for it is done. Think what you like of us. Suspicion makes love sweet, and after this I do not care whether a foe gives it away or keeps it hidden." His love now increased, and the fires of passion spread through his heart's blood. She kept on repulsing him and saying, "You cannot have me," but they continued to drink together as lovers. Ghanim was drowning in a sea of passion, while the girl became ever stricter in her modesty, until night brought its darkness and lowered the skirts of sleep on them. Ghanim got up to light the lamps and the candles, and he set the room and the tables to rights. He then took her feet and kissed them, and finding them like fresh butter, he rubbed his face on them. "Have pity, lady," he said, "on one enslaved by your love and slain by your eyes. But for you, my heart would have stayed whole." Then he wept a while, and she replied, "O my master, the light of mine eye. By Allah, I love thee and confide in thee, but I know that thou canst not be united to me. And what hindereth? He said. She answered, I will this night relate to thee my story, that thou mayest accept my excuse. She then threw herself on him and kissed him, winding her arms around his neck as she comforted him and gave him promises of union. Every night they slept on the same bed, but every time that he asked her for union, she rejected him, in spite of the fact that they loved each other and could scarcely endure to be kept apart. But they continued thus a whole month, and after this one night, that when the two of them were drunk and were lying there, Ghanim reached out and caressed her body. His hand went to her belly and down to her navel. This roused her, and she sat up, inspected her drawers, but when she found that they were still fastened, she went to sleep again. He stroked her with his hand, which slipped down to the waistband of her drawers. When he pulled at it, she woke up again and sat up, with Ghanim sitting by her side. What do you want? She asked. To sleep with you, he replied, and that we should be frank with one another. She said to him, I will now explain to thee my case, that thou mayest know my dignity, and that my secret may be revealed to thee, and my excuse become manifest to thee. He replied, Well. And she took hold of a band which confined a part of her dress, and said to him, O my master, read what is on this border. So he took the border in his hand, and looked at it, and found worked upon it in gold, I am thine, and thou art mine, O descendant of the Prophet's sallallahu alaihi wasallam uncle. And when he had read this, he let fall his hand and said to her, Reveal to me thy history. She answered, Well, and thus began. Know that I am a favorite slave of the Prince of the Faithful, and my name is Kut al-Kulub. The Prince of the Faithful, after he had reared me in his palace, and I had grown up, observed my qualities, and the beauties and loveliness with which my Lord had endowed me, and loved me excessively. He took me and lodged me in a private apartment, and appointed me 10 female slaves to serve me, and then gave me those ornaments which thou seest with me. After this, the Khalifa went forth one day on a journey to one of the surrounding provinces, and the Lady Zubaydah came to one of the female slaves who were in my service, and said, When thy mistress Kut al-Kulub sleepeth, put this piece of binj into her nose and her drink, and thou shalt receive from me a sum of money that will satisfy thee. The slave replied, Most willingly, and she received the binj from her, rejoicing on account of the money, and because she had been originally Zubaydah's slave, and she insinuated the binj into me, whereupon I fell upon the floor, with my head bent down to my feet, and seemed to be in another world. And when she could have devised no other stratagem, she put me into that chest, and privily summoned the slaves, and after having given presents to them and to the doorkeepers, sent me with the slaves on the night when thou wast reposing at the top of the palm tree, and they did with me as thou sawest, and my deliverance was effected through thy means. Then thou broughtest me unto this place, where thou hast treated me with the utmost kindness. This is my story, and I know not what hath happened to the Khalifa during my absence. Know therefore my dignity, and divulge not my case. In the Great Khan's Tent is now available on Ko-fi. If you are interested in supporting this podcast, please click on the link available on our many social media platforms or email us. Why not donate to our Ko-fi to show your appreciation? Every bit helps, and we thank you for your continued support. We love that our listeners love listening to us. Welcome to the vocabulary section for this episode. First, let's look at some of the terms used in this episode. Reared. Bring up and care for a child until they are fully grown, especially in a particular manner or place. Coax. Gently and persistently persuade someone to do something. Gelded. Castrated or having the testicles removed. Shift. A woman's straight, unwaisted dress or a long, loose-fitted undergarment. Clipping. Strike briskly or with a glancing blow. Clicketing. To be in heat or to copulate. Brokerage. The fee or commission charged by a broker. Terraces. A level, paved area or platform next to a building or a patio or veranda. Bier. A movable frame on which a coffin or a corpse is placed before a burial or cremation or on which it is carried to the grave. Confounded. Cause surprise or confusion in someone, especially by acting against their expectation. Countenance. A person's face or facial expression. Concourse. A large open area inside or in front of a public building. Emir, a ruler, chief, or commander in Islamic countries. Grandee, a man of elevated rank or station. Fathom, a unit of length equal to 6 feet 1.8 meters. Binge, obsolete form of bhang or cannabis. Zahir al-Bustan. Zahir is an Arabic female name meaning brilliance, splendor, bright, and flower. Bustan means garden or flower garden. Sabiha, a Turkish or Arabic female name meaning beautiful or forenoon. Shajarat al-Dur. Shajarat is an Arabic boy's name that means trees. Dur is an Arabic boy's name meaning pearl or magician. Nur al-Huda. An Arabic phrase meaning light of the guidance. Najmat al-Sabah. Najmat is a female name meaning grace, gift, or blessing. Sabah is an Arabic name meaning morning. Nuzbeh is an Arabic female name meaning virtue, chastity, or distance from sin. Hulmeh is an Arabic male name means for balance, patient, or leniency. Zarifeh is an Arabic female name, means intelligent, eloquent, elegant, or creative. Muleteer, a person who drives mules. Apparatus, technical equipment or machinery needed for a particular activity or purpose. Kut al-Kulub, Kut, an Arabic female name, means power, force, vigor, strength, authority, or faculty. Kulub is an Arabic female name, meaning heart. Cauterized. Burn the skin or flesh of a wound with a heated instrument, typically to stop bleeding or prevent the wound from becoming infected. Boudoir is a woman's bedroom or private room. Bales. A bundle tightly wrapped and bound with cords or ropes. Wali. Master, authority, custodian, or protector, literally, friend of God. Now let's look at some of the vocabulary used in this episode. Wreath. Cover, surround, or encircle something. Portioned. To divide something into parts or share out, or give a dowry to a bride. Commencement. An act or instance of commencing or beginning. Plenteous. Plenty. Carousing. The activity of drinking alcohol and enjoying oneself and in a noisy, lively way. Aileth, to trouble or to affect with uneasiness either of body or of mind. Lamentation, the passionate expression of grief or sorrow, or weeping. Tumultuous, making a loud, confused noise. Uproarious, excited or disorderly. Gratify, to give someone pleasure or satisfaction. Stupefied, to make someone unable to think or feel properly, befallen, of something bad happened to someone, misbegotten, badly conceived, designed, or planned, or contemptible, used as a term of abuse, abominable, worthy of causing disgust or hatred, detestable, potency, force or power, or the ability or capacity to achieve or bring about a particular result. Preservation, the act of preserving something, or the state of being preserved. Gleam, to shine with or as if with subdued, steady light or moderate brightness. Splendor, magnificent and splendid appearance or grandeur. Variegated, exhibiting different colors, especially as irregular patches or streaks. Effected, to achieve something and cause it to happen. Divulge, to make known sensitive information. Ardor, enthusiasm or passion. Entrenched, an attitude, habit, or belief firmly established and difficult or unlikely to change or ingrained. This episode has been written, edited, and produced by Saf Beg. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day and or night. And may the journeys on which you are set upon be fruitful. Thank you for listening.